Western countries. They seem only to be applied to Christians. And when the offence is made against Muslims, that seems to be treated almost as an oversight. Is that a fault in the system of jurisprudence that is operating in the West?
Yes. In fact, what has happened is that many of the laws that exist to prevent hate against identifiable groups seem to be put in abeyance when it comes to targeting Muslims. For instance, you see in Europe only a couple of years ago they had these vulgar Danish cartoons that depicted the Prophet of Islam in a very negative light. And when Muslims protested against that, they were accused of being intolerant or not being able to adjust to Western values. I think we also need to look at the reality that as it exists today, in the sense that since 9/11, a number of oppressive laws have been passed in the West, both in North America as well as in Europe, that appear to be absolutely Muslim-specific, in the sense that the target is the Muslim community residing in the two areas that I mentioned. Now, you know, in your introduction, you said that the European Union foreign justice ministers had met to warn against this rising fear and of a war between the Muslim world and the West. I'm afraid we have to be a little cautious about that, because Western politicians have a tendency to make pronouncements, but they don't actually mean that. For instance, if you consider the policies that they are formulating, they tend to be very much anti-Muslim, even though in many countries the populations are not necessarily anti-Muslim. For instance, in Canada, in December, a survey was done by the Trudeau Foundation in which they found, when the people were asked whether immigration should be stopped to Canada, 92% of the population said no. When they were asked specifically whether Muslims planning to immigrate to Canada should be put under greater scrutiny, 53% of the Canadians said absolutely not. So you can see that within the general population, there isn't that much hatred as is being projected or being whipped up. But obviously, the anti-Islamophobic policies are pursued because it fits into the broader policies that the West is pursuing in the Muslim world, whether it is in Iraq, in Palestine, against Iran, Afghanistan, and so on.
Zafar Bangesh, I detect in your tone, in the way that you express yourself, that you as a Muslim living in what is supposed to be quite a pluralistic society feel quite alienated. I noted a number of times when you described the Canadian authorities and you described the Canadian government that the pronoun you used was they. You're Canadian, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, we make no bones about it. Let me give you a very recent example. For instance, in October of 2006, a very prominent Canadian magazine by the name of Maclean's had published a scandalous article against Muslims. The article sort of made virulent attacks against Muslims, not only in Canada, but also in Europe and North America. Essentially, what the article's author said was that there are more and more Muslims coming to these societies, that Muslims are breeding far too rapidly, and very soon they are going to take over these societies, and what we really need to determine is how violent that takeover would be. And the article also said that Muslims have this tendency for, or propensity for, violence and so on. I mean, there are scandalous allegations made against Muslims. When a number of Muslims went to the magazine requesting equal space to rebut these arguments, the editor of the magazine turned around and said that we would rather go bankrupt than allow you to publish anything. So the Muslims then went to the Canadian Human Rights Commission to complain to them that we are being targeted as an entire community. And lo and behold, a minister of the government, who is supposed to be the minister of multiculturalism, issued a statement, and he said that these Muslims are trying to stifle free speech in Canada. Now, a minister who claims to be a minister of multiculturalism and is supposed to represent everybody, all the communities in Canada, for him to make such a scandalous statement is beyond belief. I mean, I'm sure he would not have dared to make such a statement if, let's say, the Jewish community were being attacked, or the black community, or any other community. But when it comes to Muslims, it appears to be fair game. So even the Minister of the Crown feels that he has the right and the liberty to be able to espouse anti-Muslim venom, and he can get away with it.
Zafar
so
Bangish,
when
thanks.
I use they, I mean everybody.
Thanks for that. Taji Mustafa, Hizbul Tahrir is an organization that takes Islam very seriously. It has been described by some as extremist. Would you say that being zealous in one's religion equates directly with extremism? And would you describe for us some of the challenges that your group has faced in trying to confront the misperceptions and the prejudices that it has faced, that it has had to deal with?
Well, in Europe nowadays, and I would say maybe in the Western world, and my colleague in Toronto has given some examples, there is what I would call a sort of secular extremism, a secular fanaticism, a liberal secular fanaticism, where they have defined that these societies have certain values and that Muslims living according to their values, living according to their way of life, Islam, not threatening anybody, not even trying to destroy the social order in the West, that Muslims have become fair game. And so we find that they demand the right to insult the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him. They demand the right to insult Muslims. And any Muslim who tries to raise a voice to say, look, surely insulting people, insulting their sensibilities, insulting their religion is going to create discord, is going to create disharmony, is going to actually sow problems within society, between communities. The secular fundamentalists and fanatics say that no, they demand the right to insult. And we see this, whether it was with the, most of your viewers can remember the speech of the Pope in 2006 in Regensburg, where he talked about the Prophet Muhammad and bringing bloodshed and all sorts of ridiculous allegations. So this is a climate, there is a new climate in the West, and that has been promoted also due to the so-called war on terror.
Taji Mustafa, how is it that you, on the one hand, put forward what appears quite a sensible manifesto about secularism, but on the other hand, you also bring in a Christian figure, a very respected Christian figure, and also criticize him. Surely the problem that is faced by Islam is a problem that secular humanism is putting in front of all of the monotheistic religions, be that Christianity, Judaism, or Islam, isn't it?
That is in part the case. That is in part the case. But there is another aspect of the case, and that is an aspect where the West is currently engaged in what they call a war on terror, which most people in the Islamic world and many Muslims within the West see as a war on Islam. And that war has a physical manifestation in Iraq and Afghanistan, the bombing and killing of our brothers and sisters there. And within the West, it has a manifestation of demonizing and trying to silence Muslims in the West. And you find that, unfortunately, from that perspective, with that background, it's not only the secular fundamentalists who have a go at Islam. Here in Britain a few weeks ago, we had Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, a bishop in the Church of England, who accused Muslims of creating no-go areas. And when he was challenged to name an area where Muslims had said other people in society could not come to, he did not name one area. So we find that there is a climate where it is fair game to demonize Muslims, whether that's from the secular fundamentalists or whether that's from wider afield due to the climate created by the war on terror. And I think Muslims here, we need to do two things, I think. We need to challenge and engage. We need to challenge those who seek to demonize Islam, Muslims, and our way of life. I want to force us to give up our values. So our members in Netherlands, for example, have created a campaign to rally Muslim voice in a peaceful manner against the forthcoming film of Geert Wilders. The Muslims shouldn't be quiet. If we're quiet about these insults and attacks and demonization, number one, the wider public will start to believe all the crazy things they hear about Muslims. They're out to kill you, they're mad. Number two, it will give license for the second time, the third time, the upteenth time, for more attacks and more demonization.
Taji Mustafa, let me just stop you there. Zafar Bangash, is it pushing the point too far to say that in the secular West, in the West where secularism, liberalism, Taji Mustafa says, has become a form of extremism, fundamentalism, is hiding behind the traditions, the vestiges, the articles of Christianity and Judaism, but isn't actually in any way inclined to their disciplines or to their practices?
Well, that's true, but I think we do not need to go through generalizations. I think in the West, by and large, religion has been abandoned. But then you see in a country like the United States, for instance, where the Christian right has become an extremely powerful force in American politics. And I believe the same thing sort of operates in parts of Europe as well.
But that's precisely my point, sir. That's precisely my point, sir. Isn't it a pretext? Because when you see Mr. Mitt Romney or you see ex-governor Mike Huckabee standing on the Republican platform and claiming the advantage of Christianity as a buffer against their own morality, whatever that may be, isn't that using or usurping Christianity's values for a political agenda that is, in fact, humanist?
Yes, of course, they are doing that. But I think people like Mitt Romney are going to face quite a bit of difficulty having to justify their religious convictions because he's a Mormon. And I think in the United States, you know, in the 60s when John F. Kennedy was running for president, his Catholicism had become a big issue. Mike Huckabee, of course, is out of the race altogether now. He's not really a serious contender. But if Mitt Romney were to become the sort of, you know, prominent Republican contender, then I think he will have to do a lot of explaining.
So let me just stop you there because we're quickly running out of time. I just want to put a last question to Taji Mustafa. Taji Mustafa, a couple of questions very briefly, please, if you'll address them. What short of surrender by the world's monotheistic religions would satisfy the secular world? That's the first bit. And the second bit is, how absolutist are the arch critics of Islam? And would it be specious to describe them as extremists who beget extremists? Now, you've already said that they're fundamentalists. Do these fundamentalists beget extremists by their actions?
They do. I mean, the war in Iraq was led by cheerleaders sitting in the West who talk about freedom and liberty and tolerance, and yet these are the same people, some of the politicians, not all of them, who were cheerleading for the bombing of people halfway around the world and led to 500,000 people being killed.
Thank you. Let me stop you there, sir. I'm afraid we've run out of time in this first half. My thanks to Taji Mustafa, Zafar Bangash and Tahir Amini, who you heard from on the phone. A break for the news headlines in brief, and when Four Corners returns, a look at the events taking place in Chad and the real prospect that President Idriss Deby may be ousted. Please stay with Press TV.